The registrations for the Austrian Legacy Masters are now open. Just head over to the sister account at Austrian_Legacy on Twitter for further information.
You are listening to In Response, a Legacy Podcast, a show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 66, the road to win of
In Response,
a Legacy Podcast.
I'm Philip Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about Legacy.
Most of the time.
Yeah, this time we have to celebrate something. I mean, I've got my first 5-0 in the league.
That's really nice.
Just after Daniel hit his third 5-0 in a row or something like that.
Not in the row, but this season, yes. Absolutely, yeah. We had, well, so Philip, you had the 5-0 last week and I had it prior to that. So I would say, Peter, you have to do it the next time.
Yeah.
So that we can complete that In Response 15-0 series.
I will do the 5-0. The next time I go to play, which will be the 15th of March, actually.
Wait, what?
I'm gonna tell you, if for some reason we play in this event and you're 4-0 and we will be paired, I will concede to you.
Wait, really? The good thing is that I'm like 100% sure that the 15th of March will for sure be a pre-release weekend. Because like that? It's okay. Every time when I go to play, it's pre-release weekend.
So it's so like you out of karma.
Out of karma, yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty unlucky because when we had our little winter break, or not really little, but the 6 weeks of winter, you were able to go 3-4 times, yeah. Am I right? And you happen to have 2 4-0s.
I went undefeated in all of them.
Oh yeah. So suddenly when there's no league anymore, Peter manages to win.
it was like I was in Prague, went really well in Prague, and then I came back, I did everything to have my music stuff at the end of November. Then the league stopped because of like Christmas parties from work and stuff like that. And yeah, I went into 4-0. Then the next thing that I could attend at like the first week of January, the FNM was cancelled for Legacy. So that's my luck.
Well, but at least I think you said 15th of March that you will be able to attend. Yeah. So but, I think that's the one time that you will actually 5-0 because no one of us is probably there.
No pressure.
Why are you not there? Preparing for the Elm qualifier on the next day?
The 15th? I should be, but I don't know. Maybe I said something, but I can't remember at the moment. But I want to know, Philip, how went your 5-0? Because it was one of the stacks that you usually don't see anymore, really, in Legacy.
Yeah, I had a sudden rush of nostalgia, actually, 2 weeks ago. Because when Peter and I talked about the Ravnica set release, or the Mercer Call of Manor, in our last episode, I reminisced about the old days of Dredge and how I loved the deck. And then I thought to myself, well, yeah. Actually, time to bring it back. And then I had a 3-2 when you got your 5-0, and I was instantly hooked again. It was so insane, really, to play a deck again that you know the ins and outs, and you can that you really had the reps in, and you can play to your advantage almost all the time, and no one else really knows how to fight it. Mm. Was just so rewarding, because at my 3-2, I had a loss against Doomsday, where my Doomsday opponent really deserved that win, because I had Leafle on board, he had two couple therapies in my graveyard, and he had Doomsday into pass, and I thought to myself, well, yeah, make two zombies, Cabal Therapy, and then just name something like Ponder. I haven't seen anything from him. And then his hand consisted of Veil of Summer, Veil of Summer, Days, LED, and Teferi Time Reveler. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, how can you win out of here? I mean, I simply don't see it. I have an active Cephalid Colosseum.
Yeah. But does Veil of Summer prevent that?
No,
it's it does a land. Not. Okay, sure. Yeah, of course.
And I simply haven't seen it. I could have fired off the second Cabal Therapy on Teferi or an LED or something.
I mean, he could cast Veil of Summer probably in response to one.
Probably, yeah. That could have happened. But yeah, it was like, I simply couldn't see the line that you win. Yeah, and I said to him, if you win this, then you totally deserved it. And it was like, I passed. He drew his card for the turn. Played the it was a Tundra on top, so he didn't have the mana to play Teferi actually, mm-hmm. and he didn't have the mana. He had only three underground seas. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have the mana to Veil of Summer.
Okay.
And it was like he drew the Tundra, played the Tundra, played the Teferi, played the LED, minus the Teferi, cracked the LED for blue, drew Fastest Oracle, played Fastest Oracle with exactly three cards, and three Devotion, and the Cephalic Colosseum has done nothing.
It's done nothing, yep.
It was so insane. It was really great, actually. I was so stunned. And I said to him, you deserve this. It was such a nice pile. It was such a nice way of winning here. That was really great. And the second game I lost, I simply can't remember what was that. I think it was something really, really almost impossible to win against,
Initiative or something?
Or something.
Ah, Helm, okay.
No, Initiative, I have won against Initiative, so it was something, I can't remember anymore. But yeah, then I was hooked on my 3-2. it was just so insane, because every decision mattered that I did. It was just feeling myself again with all the power creep that happened. That being said, I played a list out of 2019 or something.
No changes, nothing updated.
No really changes. I mean, the only changes that I did was a Hogak.
Okay.
And an Ox of Agonas. These were the two.
Okay.
Newest editions.
Have you seen this? Well, I have seen one version. I don't know if it's a popular one, but you can toy around with Poxwalkers, technically. Yeah. And there is this new card that I wanted to ask you about.
Duskana, the Rage Mother.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of Murders of Carl of Manor. Yeah.
What does this card do?
It's a legendary bear. A Naya colored bear for 4 mana. It's a 5/5.
And okay, I was expecting a 2/2 for 2 because you said bear.
No, it's a 5/5. It's a Rage
close,
Mother.
Close. It is close.
Yeah, but it does something with bears. So when it enters the battlefield, you draw cards for every bear you control. So for every 2/2 you control, you draw a card.
For every zombie?
Yeah.
So for every 2/2 you
draw a card. A creature with base power 2/2, you draw a card. And I think creatures you control that have base power 2/2, gain plus 3/3 and trample.
Yeah, when they attack, right?
When they attack, yeah.
Okay. So it's crazy, actually.
It's a big overrun for zombie tokens.
Yeah.
It's a nice target.
Basically, it's
a sweet one.
It's the same it's the same thing that Flamekin Sealer does, mm-hmm. with a little bit of an upside.
But it can fuel your engine, right? Because it draws.
Mm, in my opinion, when you are that far into the game, it's a little bit win more. For sure.
But is Poxwalkers also 2-2?
Poxwalkers is 3-1, like Ygritte.
Okay.
So the thing here is this deck actually tries to maximize Poxwalkers with four Otherworldly Gaze, four Faithless Looting, and four Cabal Therapies so that you trigger the Poxwalkers all the time. And also the neat thing is I checked this today with our local judge, Jonas. If you sacrifice a Poxwalkers with Cabal Therapy, they return, they trigger off the same Cabal Therapy and return to play.
What is the wording? Whenever you cast?
The wording is whenever you cast.
Sure? Yeah.
Whenever you cast a spell from anywhere other than your hand, return Poxwalkers from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped.
Oh, yes.
Because you pay the cost at first and then they are second already in the graveyard and
casting happens. It's very weird because for Young Pyromancer, it didn't work like that.
Yeah.
Because for Young Pyromancer, the trigger, it needs to be on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And this needs to trigger from the graveyard. So
therefore it
perfectly works fine, yeah. Because when you are done finishing paying the cost, it's in the graveyard and then put on the stack. And then it triggers. Yeah.
Makes sense. That's sweet.
That's really sweet because you can churn out a lot of tokens with Cabal Therapy and you don't lose a creature on the battlefield. So that's really insane, actually. That being said, the list is pretty clean. There are some concerns about the mana base because it's just straight Izzet. Yeah. Or Izzet with one Underground Sea. And because you have an anger in there, and it seems a little bit overkill. Because in my opinion, it's like you don't need the fast kill. You don't need 40 damage turn one, because it depends on the meta. Because if you're facing a fast combo, then for sure you need to kill them before they kill you.
Or Stompy or something.
Yeah, but if you face mid range control. It doesn't really matter if you have 14 power on board and attack right now or have 60 power on board the next turn. They simply can't handle all that much. Yeah. Sometimes you have to grind a little bit more and these lists are a little bit too all in for my liking.
Yeah. And how does grinding nowadays work with Uro being a play in a metagame? Because like Uro was like the death nail for like mana-less dredge, for example. I played it a lot and you basically stomped over control, but when control had like the free exile your bridge card, it was kind of awkward.
Yeah, because the way I tried to combat Uro was like to roll it slow, to simply... control decks always want to go turn three, Uro. Uro... dice a die trigger and draw a card, put a land into play.
Yeah.
And that's basically what you're trying to let happen.
And then you go off. Okay, sure.
Or if you can go off Cabal Therapy out there, Uro, and then
in the same turn
and clear the coast for anything else, that's the way you do it. But I think that's not really possible with Mana-less Dredge.
Bomaster is also pretty shitty, right? Because he can ping himself.
Yeah, they can ping themselves. These are the things where I really love to have Ygritte or the Poxwalkers.
Yeah.
Because those things really, really punch a hole in controller and on these decks. Yeah.
Relying on Bridge is a little bit inconsistent with the things happening in Legacy.
Not the same as back then.
Yep.
But what I really love about my old list was the Street Raves, because they caught so many people again off guard. It's like against control and they bought in Surgical and you know you can roll it slow and you go, I'm on a draw.
Upkeep going into my draw step. Surgical, Street Rave.
yeah, that's basically what happened three times in the last 2 weeks. And it was always just such a blowout.
Yeah, because you... But one thing that we really have to mention is, like, I think you kind of pimped out your list a little bit. If I saw it correctly, you got some upgrades in Color of Mana, am I right?
A little bit, yeah. I've bought myself some Golgari Fux in
Old Border
and Golgari Grave Trolls in Old Border. So, yeah, I don't like the Stinkweed Imps in Old Border because the artwork isn't right.
Yeah, I agree.
So I have to have them in New Border, unfortunately. But everything else is pimped out, basically. Pimped out for myself, no foils.
I'm also not a foil guy.
But yeah, after like the graving anatomy, how Philip went to the 5-0, Daniel, you're like the bug in the herd. You want to talk about like being the menace of the Austrian Legacy League?
I think into my beach bean. Yeah.
I mean, I posted it. I phrased it like that when I did the Austrian Legacy League post. Who can stop you? I mean, the first 5-0 with Buck Beanstalk now.
Yeah, it was. I think it was in terms of league events. It was 2 5-0s in a row where I played. And there was a couple of events in between, but where I played, it was 2 5-0s in a row with that. The other ones I actually did with Mono Black Besiege. The first. Yeah. It was not Bug Beans. But the deck is just insane. It is crazy. Crazy, yeah, absolutely. I don't think I have too many bad matchups overall in Legacy, because at least for what is going on in Linz, I would say. One of the best ways to beat this deck, I think, is when you just play something like lands. I typically don't have much to do against that, because your new best plan is Murktide plus Wasteland on Maze of If and just striking them fast. And I think Cloud Post is okay, then Naya Depths or something. This can be a little bit struggling, but overall, you have a game against all different decks. It is really this hybrid of mid-range, grindy, because you have the beans, you have a lot of triggers, and you have a lot of different value engines that you can utilize. Mm-hmm. And you have Murktides. I mean, you can finish an opponent in 2 turns and then just...
I'm currently a lot in talks with Toby, mm-hmm. the winner of our last season of the Austrian Legacy League. And how to play Painter currently, especially because like Bug Beanstalk is such a problem.
It is really,
We currently are in thinking about that we should be like 40% against Bug.
Something like that sounds okay.
40, maybe even 45.
I think depends on how
you build the deck.
And I think,
and how to play
how you know the matchup also I think improves very well. You can get a lot of percentage points from the back perspective if you know what Painter is up to.
Yeah, the thing is like from the Painter side, you will struggle about in the late to ultra late game of the field, because like you can't outgrind the beanstalks.
Yeah, they have too much value going on.
Then the early game can be kinda hard. For Beanstalk, on the other hand, even though you have the disrupting pieces of Wasteland, a lot of early removal, but if Beanstalk does not have like the perfect hand in hand and needs cantrips, you really have to aggressively blast every cantrips and stuff like that. I hope I don't give away too much information here, but the thing is like you will struggle at some point in the matchup. But if you can force your opponent to have like awkward plays or have to roll down a Murktide early, even though if he wants to cantrip and find a solution to something else later on, it's really hard.
Or you just have to play like Toby did last Friday. Mull to 3, keep a hand, Painter Saga, Ancient Tomb.
I mean, it kind of happens. Those are okay. All 4-offs in the deck.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, this is one of the reasons, but the average Beanstalk list only plays 3 Wastelands, but I insist, I think that 4 is absolutely correct because of this. And especially since bad matchups evolve something that you want to have Wasteland against, like lands, for example, I think 4 is absolutely correct.
Yeah, Wasteland is such a menace. You need it. It's
you struggle against Painter suddenly if you can handle the sagas.
Yeah.
And Painter has the advantage of the early loads of mana in the beginning with Ancient Tomb, the petals and stuff like this. They can power out Magus, Fable, or Painter plus something else. You need to deal with that, and Wasteland really, really helps a lot.
Yeah, you have the stronger cards below the curve.
Yeah.
With the acceleration from Ancient Tomb and stuff like that. Yeah. And one thing is, like, we like against Delver and something like that in the later years, it was like really good if you go like land, Pithing Needle on Wasteland, mm-hmm. and then play a Saga game.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know what the back plays? Fucking Witherbloom Command.
Yeah.
So this isn't even an option anymore. And by the way, they're also playing Deed. So
Deed in the sideboard and Force of Wigger. It's crazy good.
Together before. Yeah. It's
the tools are just very, very.
All the tools. Yeah. The one thing that you can do is on the painter, this perspective is like disrupt them. Need them to top deck the things like we do. And if they can't do it, you win. But if you get the cards that they need, they have all the tools to beat you.
Yeah, that's true.
Play all the Magus that you can. I play a Swamp in the sideboard just because of this.
Yeah.
To combat this.
Do you play Dismembers?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't need the Swamp.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, but I want to increase my chances. Because we also have a fair amount of Stompy and Initiative in this, Initiative doesn't, I think, play Magus, but
killing the creature is
still good.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, the deck is overall really good. I think I'm overall, what did I say?
18-3
in games with this version. And with the current points, I have like an average 11 points or so with the league, the league average points. At the moment, at least, I think it's must be a little bit over 11 points per on average per event that I attend. It's crazy good.
Yeah.
I think right now, obviously, well over 70-80 win percentage or something.
Yeah,
like
it's really, really good. And
it's abysmal. Well, it's really out of any reasonable levels, actually. I'm pretty sure it will lower down a little bit because people also adapt to the deck a little bit.
But one thing is, like, it's still a blue deck. It's still a deck that can play tempo. Mm-hmm. It's still a card that gets to have all the tool it wants.
Yep.
So it's really hard to menace it out.
Yep.
It was a long time until we had... After the last good tempo deck, the next good tempo deck.
But I love the fact that it's bug.
Yeah, it's bug. It's bug. One of the best color combinations for me as well. Yes, I agree. It's just really phenomenal. Cannot agree more.
But we have a kind of new card that wants to talk about it. But before that, we're going to plug some Patreons.
Oh, yes.
So I should do it.
Yeah, okay. It's your turn this time.
It's my turn. So thank you, patrons, for helping us keep the podcast alive. Thank you, Mats, Duncan, Chino, and
Jonas.
Oh,
Moritz.
Sorry.
I mean, Moritz. Jonas, sorry. We want you in the booth too.
Jonas, you're officially invited.
All
the Jonases that we know.
These are at least
two. Moritz.
At least.
Yeah, it's Moritz.
It's Moritz. Thank you. For
absolutely
supporting the show
and
if you want to also win like the Austrians do, just go on our Patreon response_legacy and subscribe.
And with that, we're gonna dive right into the domain of the Dracovistation of Legacy. We have the Leyland of the Guild Pact arrived together with an old card, or a reminiscence of a really old card, but still an old card. It's like Modern Horizons 1 or was it Modern Horizons 2?
I think it was 2 or so, but...
I'm unsure. I don't know. It should be 2.
I think it has the same set symbol as the Solitude and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is 2.
So it's Scion of Draco. It's the casual 4-4 for 12 mana with the neat ability to cost 2 less for each basic land type you control, and gives every creature that you control, I mean, it's a colorless creature, so it doesn't give itself the things. Like, if it's blue, it gives hexproof. If it's red, it gives first strike. If it's white, it gives vigilance. For green, it gives trample. And for black, it gives lifelink.
Lifelink for black. Ah, okay.
I think it's lifelink for black. So, yeah, what can happen? I mean, then suddenly we have a new card on the block. It's a casually four green, which was four green for Leyland of the Guild Pact. All said, yeah, it's going to be really good in Pioneer because then you can have Nyctra's power out a lot of more mana in the early game. And then the modern player base said, this card is fucking bonkers if we played in Rhinos. And now we have it in Legacy. We have it for basically four color control because this card is fucking good with, for example, Up the Beanstalk, which is banned in Modern. But in Legacy, we have, Up the Beanstalk lists together with the card. We have, like, Rhinos decks together with the card, and the card is really good. The combination of those cards is really good.
In my opinion, if we just look over the card, it basically says if it's in the open, like any Leyland, if it's in an opening hand, you may begin the game with it on the battlefield. And it says each non-land permanent you control is all colors, and lands you control are every basic land type in addition to its other types.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does is, fuck your turn one Blood Moon, basically.
Yeah. No.
No, not really.
No, because this is timestamp.
Is it timestamp?
Yes, because this affects both on the same layer. Because this one says it's every type, in addition to the other ones, and Blood Moon says all are mountains, and Blood Moon are always played after the ley line, and then I think it's timestamps. And then it overrules all the other things. I think.
I will Google.
But maybe it's not.
Okay. Then it's only broken and not simply bonkers, this card. Because this basically lets you cast any spell off of a wasteland, off of a fetchland.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the ultimate mana fixing. It's a death rite for zero.
Yeah. You have... It doesn't matter what... You cannot get color screwed.
Both effects are in layer 4 with no dependencies. Therefore,
it's timestamp. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So typically, Blood Moon overrules it then in that case.
But if you play another thing, which you can't because your opponent has Blood Moon out.
But you can. What is the color cost of this Leland? It is
4 green.
Ah, okay.
Or everything without green.
Actually, you just need one basic land and you have all colors available again. So
true.
Because Blood Moon says non-basic lands are mountains.
Mm-hmm. Then you have
everything. You just need an island or something, and then you are not color screwed anymore.
Yeah,
and
which is still a thing because like the four color decks have a plains and an island, and you can island cycle for the island
with Lauren Revealed.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So these are pretty much now Blood Moon proof, actually.
Mm-hmm.
These decks.
Well, yeah, like I said, this Leyland, how good can you cast it is the question, I think, if you want to say that. Because typically you have this Leyland, and then, okay, with a basic, you have one mana of all five colors.
Yeah.
But I think Blood Moon is still pretty...
Blood Moon is still good?
Still very good.
Yeah, it's for sure. I mean,
But it's now for sure worse. Because, like, the one thing is, like, it was really hard for you to get the Blood Moon off the field.
Mm-hmm.
But do you know which card you can play for one again if you have one basic? Leyland Binding.
Yeah.
You can play the Scion of Draco for two mana with one basic. So
just one basic, right?
Yeah, just one basic.
It costs one mana. Right?
No, it's
you don't even need a basic. You can cast Sign of Draco with two non-basic lands.
No, if you have like the Blood Moon on the opposing side, for example.
Ah, okay. Yeah, but
if you have one basic, this basic
and another land.
You need two mana to cast the Draco. But it costs
the Drake, yes, but the linen binding is 1 mana.
It's 1 mana, yeah. Just a fetch out. Mm-hmm. Just a basic out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
For the Drake, you need 2 mana, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, but it's like really, really hard. Because like the one thing that you have like with those Up the Beanstalk decks, it was like, it was never good to disrupt the creatures that they play.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something that you needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And now? One key thing on Draco is hexproof,
mm-hmm.
which mm-hmm. makes it really hard to interact with opposing creatures.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of difficult now,
mm-hmm.
to have a lot of more counterplay. It really depends how the thing shakes up in the near future.
And also, Leader of the Guild Pact has two. I mean, they don't play it here, but they have two other modes that we simply are not allowed to forget. Pitches to Solitude and Pitches to Force of Will.
Mm-hmm. Pitches to Fury, Pitches to Force of Vigor.
Yeah, but Fury isn't that much played with these kind of cards.
Force of Vigor, sure.
But Force of Vigor, yeah, for sure, yeah.
It's insane.
Also, Pitches to Force of Negation, yeah.
Can't be killed.
I'm in, I wanna bet this card gets banned.
You think so?
Okay. because
you're calling it now.
I'm calling it now because it goes against the fundamentals of Magic, which is the color pie. I mean, cards are stretching it all the time.
Mm.
That's for sure. But Deathrite got the X because of
color pie.
Of color pie.
Mm-hmm.
Renin 6 got the X because of color pie.
Mm-hmm.
Arkham's Astrolabe got the X because of color pie. And this is the same thing that we're seeing here right now. And it is backed up by a dragon that only works with the color. So
it costs 4 mana, right?
It costs 4 mana, yeah.
If you want to hard cast it. Okay, thinking about it.
The one thing that I have here is like, the one thing that we currently have in common with the best control decks, those domain decks, back, is like Beanstalk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe we get to, in the near future, to a common ground that like Beanstalk makes it way too hard for fair non-blue decks to combat the format that we have to ban Beanstalk. Or discard as bonkers that we have to ban the Leyland, because this is the thing that makes this deck in specifics way too good. So I'm currently like, give it like up to the next episode, and then we will see how good the domain decks perform. Then I will make the prediction that maybe we get up the Beanstalk ban within the next year or so.
In my opinion, it's up the Beanstalk is extremely strong, but it's like the design mistakes that make Legacy thrive. Yeah. So I think Up the Beanstalk is here to stay. It has a build around, and Leyland of the Guild Pact doesn't need a build around. It's like slam 4 Leyland, slam 4 Sign of Draco.
4 Leyland bending.
It will make your deck instantly better.
You think? Okay. Yeah.
It's like for Beanstalk, for Leyland Binding, for Scion, for Leyland of the Guild Pact. And it's like such a strong core. It's insane how good it is, actually.
The Leyland in itself is like so much mana fixing that it's probably worth to play it probably everywhere.
I'm really curious how this turns out, actually. You're very, very stoked about it. I have actually only heard about this really today, this combo, just as we started speaking. my first reaction is actually a little bit negative, to be honest.
Really?
Wow. At least my little bit feeling. Well, it feels a little bit more when I think about it. So I always think about statistics and probability of how you play these cards. If you get your ley line, if you get your Draco, you can have this starts, open up ley line, turn to Draco, and then concede. This happens. But I'm thinking, how likely is it that you have both the ley line and the Draco in your first 8 to 9 cards, let's say? That's the first question I'm asking. Then, second of all, do their cards do something on their own? When you don't draw the other one, I think both cards are close to useless. Because having to cast use 4 mana to card cast the leyline is taxing in Legacy, especially when any blast can counter it, can destroy it. And the Draco is just you can cast it without the leyline, it's for sure, because you have multiple colors in your deck, for sure. But a control deck wouldn't do that without the leyline. It's just not really, you know, this efficient threat that you would normally have in your deck. You would never play a Scion. And for this reason, I kind of feel that this is only good when you are lucky, when you mull good, and I don't know, when you pull it off and you get it into play early. And then, because if it is not in your opener, I have the feeling it's clunky. You know, you have to pay 4 mana to cast the leyline, then the Scion sometimes, but what have you, it's turn 5-6, yeah, whatever, I don't care.
I think you're right on Scion. That's why I'm not advocating here for, or that's why I'm pretty sure Scion will go back to where it was, into nothingness, once the leyline gets the X. But the real culprit here is the leyline. Because even if you take the Scion out of the equation, okay, simply the fact that leyline of the guild pact makes a leyline binding so much better, the leyline of the guild pact patches pitches to both Solitude and Force of Will, yeah, in one card, and has the upside of being in your opening hand and is a mana fixer, is in my opinion probably too much of a card.
Can be. I would say though, this argument of it pitches to Force is very, very important and very good.
Yeah.
But
and also pitch to Solitude in a control shell.
I agree.
Because
I agree.
If we just substitute the Scion with Solitude, this deck doesn't lose that much.
I know. The only thing that I'm thinking is, what is the difference? You know, when typically when you say, "Oh, this card pitches to Force," it does. This typical card does anything or does something from turn one on until the last turn, and I think Leyland is only really good in your opening hand, and then later on it's not so good, and you only have this pitching, I think. And I think this could be a little bit, I don't want just a blue card in my deck for, yeah, Force, you know, that does not something. Maybe I'm wrong, but
yeah. One thing that I think has to be mentioned here is, like, such decks is not the only thing where it is played. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we also have in Legacy, which is also a pretty, pretty strong tier deck, mm-hmm, is Rhinos. And in the Rhino shell, I think this card excels. Because in the Rhino shell, you have, like, a lot of cards that you want to pitch, because you can't play like cheap cards, because you have to jump into Rhinos. That, yeah, that means you have Force of Wigan in the sideboard. That means that you have, I don't think they play Fury, but
they play Fury.
They play Force of Will and Force of Negation. So having a card that pitches for everything and giving the deck another angle of attack with the Scion, it's like a really, really strong point. And this is also the adaptation that the modern version made. They're playing now Domain Rhinos with 4 Leyline and 4 Draco just fit under the deck. And I think this version is also something that is really, really great in Legacy, especially since Wasteland is not a card that we have in Modern. So this card giving the deck a better angle against Wasteland decks also, while having the option to, if you're playing not against the Wasteland deck and not have, like, the Leyland in your opening hand to go for a Triumph on turn one and another and a Duel on turn two to go into the Scion, and then on turn three you cascade, it's like a really, really strong thing that you can, yeah, do.
I agree with all of those things that you guys are saying, but this all is basically,
it's just assumption.
No, it is assuming that you have your Leyland. And no. I'm just...
No, he doesn't assume that you have the Leyland.
If I have the Leyland in my opening hand, I can do like with the basics, starts, the yeah. insane start. But even if I don't have the Leyland go Triumph Duel into Draker, and it's just a 4-4, nothing more. But it still pitches to every single card that is...
And this is for me the question a little bit. If then the pitching part is only a thing that is really remaining, if this is good enough then. If you have too many, you know, games where you're dead if you don't have it, or like really unfavorable when you don't have it, and you win every time when you have it, it feels like, I don't know, I mean, if the odds, I don't know how much you can mull then for these kind of cards, but it needs to be solid up, because I think having this in the opening hand is like 40% naturally.
And it's 40, yeah.
If you mull multiple times increases, of course, I don't know what the numbers are, but if you mull to 5, let's say, every time.
For Rhinos in specific, I don't think that you mull for it. I don't know how Medvedev did, because he went 4th place in the challenge on Saturday. But Leylands are always a little bit of getting lucky cards. It's like with the Leyland of Void in the sideboard. But the thing that I think for Rhinos is like, you don't have the cantrips to search for specific cards. And if you have like 3 different colors that you have to pitch to, and you have cards that you can randomly draw if you don't have the ley line in your opening hand that pitches to every single one that you if you need it, it's basically like a joker card that you can draw. It's like not the thing that wins you the game, but it's still a really, really good defensive tool in your hand.
I really like the analog here with the joker, basically, that you get to play in traditional 52 card decks or poker decks or something, that the joker card. I really like that.
I think it will be very, very interesting to see how this goes.
I'm not one to advocate that fast for a ban, but this is something...
but you called it.
normally, but this time I'm really thinking...
Okay. I think it's
this
it's
probably slow. Shouldn't have been printed.
I think it's... I would... My guess is that it's just maybe a flavor and people are trying it, and it feels dicey to me. But let's see. It could very well be that, have then...
The next 3 weeks will bring us a lot of information, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it really depends how strong it is. I think the lifelink part can't be underestimated on the card. Yeah.
I think Hexproof
is such good for board states. The first drag makes it really hard to interact
Is it like Vigilance, First Strike, Lifelink, and Hexproof, and it's Trample, right?
Vigilance, okay. Hexproof, Lifelink, First Strike, and Trample. I mean, it's...
And it has flying on its own.
Yeah.
The card has flying on its own.
But just thinking, First Strike, Vigilance, Trample, Hexproof.
It makes racing really hard. For example, if you are on...
If I just play a 5-5 Murktide, you cannot attack.
Yeah, but you can't attack either. Because if you attack, I have the Bob presence now. Because all of my creatures have life, right?
Kind of.
This card, but you play other cards too. You're playing in this version, for example, you play Murktide yourself.
And when you have this, and maybe a second one, and you decide to attack, you always have to fear Blast. Because I block, Blast the Leyland.
Yeah, you have to fear the Blast the Leyland, for example. Here.
I think there's a lot of things that... It feels also not too...
But
also an artifact. Yeah, I'm just thinking, you know.
It's a really interesting thing, because you have the vulnerable part in the Leyland, for example.
Yeah.
But, for example, against, like, Initiative and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
It's good. It's really insane, because if you have this one out, they can't race you anymore. You block all of their creatures. They can't solitude your creatures.
Yeah,
they can't blink your creatures. Yeah. It's insane.
It is a better skull...
It's a better skull on steroids.
Yeah.
Because you attack the count block, you gain 4 life. You still have the 4-4 first striking
you
life.
Get the initiative and
you
stuff
get
like
the
this,
initiative.
Yeah. I guess this is very good. There's no issue about
it. But there
this,
are yeah, still decks where it's hard. Maybe it's hard against combo, but then you have the forces because you have blue deck. Yeah, it's an interesting card. It's an interesting like package you can put into various decks. Because it's like, as we before mentioned, like the 16 to 20, the 12 to 16 cards that you want to add. It's like, for sure, the Draco, the Leyline, and the Leyline Binding. And if you want to go value, you go for
Beanstalk.
Up the Beanstalk.
Yeah,
yeah, Beanstalk is nice. Also with the sign.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like an additional card that can trigger the Beanstalk.
Beanstalk is just
and then you can play pitch cuts. For example, he played 4 Force of Negation in the sideboard.
And 4 Force of Will in the main
and
deck.
And 4 Force of Will in the main deck, because if you play against combo, you shave all your removal, and then you drop like one big thing into one big fin if you have the Leyline out. Always if you have the Leyline out into like the Beanstalk, then you draw a shit ton of cards because everything triggers the thing, and then you have the forces already. And an additional, like, Leyline is just a simple, I can pitch it to force, it's better than a Leyline here.
Yeah, so this card really is insane in my opinion.
Just thinking, because we have this fourth place list from the Legacy Challenge of, 17th of February here. It plays Doorkeeper Thrall.
I don't know.
What is this card actually? Why? This is what I'm just also a little bit wondering.
Doorkeeper?
Is it
it's a 2-mana.
Is
one
it Golgari?
Oh
no! This is the stops entering the battlefield to trigger.
Okay, because it's also 3 off in the sideboard.
And he had yeah.
Why?
Because it's against Doomsday.
Okay.
The only thing that's basically
is it only Doomsday?
Can beat you.
And initiative.
Initiative
is okay. Yeah.
Also, any kind of comes into play, destroy target enchantment.
The pitch. Ah, yeah.
Also pitch elementals or, yeah. So I can totally see
Uro
that.
Half. It's not really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it's
not really good against
it's good Uro. Against grief.
Yeah.
Mm. After turn 2, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it has some stuff.
And also, because I see it
stops Atraxa in online because like
yeah,
reanimator's
big. And what I also see here is Mystic Sanctuary with Leyline is also insanely good.
It's okay. Yeah. You can
as a 4th land,
You still need to have 3 other lands, but yeah. Absolutely. It's good, yeah. You don't care about what lands you fetch.
Yeah.
It's good, and then you can trigger consistently your Mystic Sanctuary.
So, I mean, I think we go into a last topic if we just want to talk a little bit about it. I mean, we were on the curve. I put a little way in, but do you guys have really bad stomach? Because it stinks in here. Someone ate way too many beans.
It's for sure Daniel. Because I feel
guilty. I feel guilty.
No, just a little bit of a band talk or like a format evaluation, maybe call it like that. Do you think Beans is too strong here?
Well, we have this big new thing with Leyline going on right now. So I don't think you can really realistically say anything at this moment. But Beans is really, it's up there. I don't know, one of the top 2 or 3 best things you can do in Legacy. Absolutely.
For sure. I'm 100% with you here. But in my opinion, Beans is, although it's incredibly strong, it's still not in the likes of Raghavan, Renan 6 or something like that.
Hmm?
Not even in the likes of Expressive Iteration. Because although it draws you a lot of cards, it's not like Expressive Iteration get +2, Mystic Sanctuary back get +2 all the time.
Yeah.
It's not in that S tier, basically in that bannable tier. It's like A tier, it's for sure an extremely good card, but in my opinion, it's not ban worthy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, as I said previously, it's like a really, really strong player. It's like the best card advantage engine that we have currently in Legacy. The one thing that strikes it a little bit for me and can be something that can hurt the card or get it banned in the a little bit further away future, I would say, is like it's so strong in blue decks because of the interaction with Force of Will.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And especially the integration of Leyland Binding in those. That it basically invalidates a little bit the non-blue and non-blue go long decks, because it's really hard. The one thing that's really strong, because it's like we had in Bug the Innovation to play Murder's Cut, for example, to have additional cards as removal that also triggers the Beanstalk, which basically substitutes the Leyland Binding here. You have a really strong core in there, but a lot of the versions are basically forced to go like into the Bunt Triangle and then splash for another thing, which can be kind of challenging for the metagame.
Just one quick question here. I know that you're probably going off Pokemoki's list here, but is there a reason to not play a go four color and not play Kefren?
Yes, there's a reason. The bug pile explicitly doesn't want to overload with this 5 cost cards, because they are too clunky and you're just relying on Beanstalk in this case, and there's a lot of matchups, especially combo faster decks where Beanstalk is actually not very good, or against opposing Bowmasters, for example, Beanstalk is also very good. Oftentimes you board one out in this case, for example, even. So always having to play this one strategy is not so good. And so having just cheap, efficient interaction in between and don't rely on Beanstalks all the time is one reason, because this would Kefren be one of this. And then going for color, you lose Wasteland. You lose your mana consistency. And I think, I really think that Wasteland is one of the biggest reasons why you would go back instead of four color with Leyland Bindings. And because you can also stand, since you're only three colors, you can realistically beat Blood Moon effects reasonably well, because you have access to your island and your swamp after sideboarding, and this helps quite a bit. So these two reasons, I think, and on top that you don't want to go all in with Beanstalk, is the reason why you would not really. But you can do that with different deck then, but for this version or this strategy at least, it's intended to be. You really want to go in both directions, going a little bit down, low to the ground with your interaction, or go the grinding route. You really want to switch gears. And this is, you need to play it like this.
Yeah, you really cemented here my opinion on not banning or Beanstalk or don't, that we don't have to ban it, because the fact that you say it's not always really good to have, it's not always something that you want to have to, you bought one out even sometimes. For me, it's a fact that this card isn't too strong, because cards like Ragavan of the like or Oko and Arkham's Airstrip are cards that you didn't even try to board out against combo.
You boarded out Ragavan against elves.
Yeah, against elves. Really? No. Peter, that's your argument? Against elves?
No. One thing I wanted to... But mostly you board out... Do you board out one Beanstalk against Buck Beanstalk?
No.
Beanstalk.
No, yes.
In the mirror,
yes.
You need it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think
against Grixis Delver, because you are better in the late game, because the opponent doesn't have Beanstalks and you just... hedge against their Bowmasters.
Because the second and third is really bad.
And also,
the first one is insane.
Yeah, and also Beanstalks are clunky in the early game, so this is a fast deck you're playing against, so Grixis Delver is the deck you
want to drop on. The Beanstalk on like turn 4, turn 5, then you win the late game, But
when you have a window, yeah, when you have the window.
Yeah. Now I want to circle back a little bit. And Leyland Sion is probably something that you won't ever board out.
Like, probably if you want to have this in your deck. Yeah, yeah.
No, it's just too strong.
You have to keep it, of course, because you cannot shave them. Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And otherwise you have to board 8 cards. I mean, maybe you can do that if you have...
Maybe you can board out a Sion or something, but you certainly don't want to board out a Leyland.
I found the solution for Sion. Because it only has Hexproof, you can melt on X12.
No, what really works is Serenity.
Yeah, Serenity is strong.
Serenity simply clears the board. Yeah. Clears
but then you still lose against Rhinos or whatever he does.
Unfortunately, yes, because Rhinos are insane.
Yeah. But one thing that I wanted to pick up on you is like you asked against Kefrin and Buck or adding Buck to play 4 color. Do you think like an Bunt-esque shell or Bunt-ported shell of the Buck pile would be strong?
I thought the same kind of. And there is one. I played actually one. Was it similar? I can't recall what the version is. But then you have like forces. You have Murktide. You have
You have a Catherine, lot of clunky and big cards.
You already still have too many things going for Leyland.
Is it like you have to play a 3 Murktide, 3 Catherine, or 4 Catherine, 2 Murktide, or the other way around?
And to be honest, the only reason, well, the single biggest reason why you're black is Bowmasters.
You need it against the
you want this card.
So for the Bunt-esque shell, you need like a draw Punisher like Bowmasters, and then you have to play like Narset.
It's so clunky, then.
It's already clunky.
I would be happy to play clunky against this because Wasteland just.
Yeah, because Wasteland Days is like.
Yeah.
Play on curve. Yes. Sucker.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're getting really crazy. Naya, Catherine.
There is still no Bowmasters.
But
and why red? And what's the reason for red? Because Pyroblast is not so great at the moment. Yeah. You lose blue.
Wear and tear.
You lose blue. So I would say no.
Absent then.
There's also no blue.
Yeah, no blue, but you have Bowmasters.
You have Bowmasters, yeah. But,
and Murderous Cut.
And Murderous Cut.
Yeah.
And Catherine.
No,
And no Pondus and no Brainstorms.
I think without Force of Will, Beanstalk is not really playable.
Yeah, no. You need Forces, and you need a good removal spell that can trigger the Beanstalk. Yeah. And I think this is the Murderous Cut for Bug, and this is the Leyland Binding for Bunt. Or for Color. But I think...
I think we can for sure wrap this episode up. So if you like what we are doing, consider following us on every social media available. It's @response_legacy. You can find me on Twitter. It's @finnickmtg, PHINEKMTG. Daniel, where can we find you on social media?
You can also find me on Twitter. It is @flyingdelver. And Peter, where you can find you?
You can find me on X, previously known as twitter.com. I'm called Unicorn Lord in there, but the O in the Lord is a zero.
And also, before we totally wrap it up, the registrations for the Austrian Legacy Masters are now open. Just head over to our sister account @Austrian_Legacy for registering for our big event in summer.
In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.